way. Okay, so this is the 22nd of November, 2022 at Gita Fest, and this is the fourth lesson of Career Dharma. So here we're going to look at what happens if you're in the wrong field. So far we've looked at the six ways of being prosperous, and we defined the four fields, and then we looked at what's the inclination for each of the fields and what's the dharmic expertise for each of the fields. And I would imagine that by now each of you has is at least starting to get some idea, where do I fit here? And now we're going to talk about when it goes wrong. And talking about when it goes wrong is also helpful for us to figure out whether we're in the right or the wrong place. And as I've said before, this understanding of what happens when it goes wrong is what really shows why the Lord has these four divisions and why Srila Prabhupada felt that establishing these four divisions, both for the practicing devotees and for society in general, is important. Because without understanding this, you might say, well, some people are nicely situated and some people are not. Oh, well, so what? But this gives you the so what. Now, Krishna has two verses in the Bhagavad Gita, almost identical. The first two lines of each of these verses are completely identical, where he says what happens when a person who has the inclination for one field works in another field. Now, as a professional teacher, I know that when you want to emphasize something, you repeat it. And also when you want to emphasize something, you say it at the end. So Krishna both repeats this and says this at the end. So the first place is in 335. Huh? So Shreyan Swadharma Viguna, Swadharma, your own Dharma. Shreyan, it's the best, it's the highest. Padadharma, someone else's Dharma. Don't do someone else's Dharma. Don't go on someone else's path, even if it seems easier. Better to have the difficulties of your own path than someone else's path. And we have in the last word here, we're going to look at in more detail, Bhayavaha. Anybody know what bhaya means? Fear. And what's a vayavaha? It's a vehicle, like a machine. Yes, that's the Russian word for car is machine. What do you call machines?
Same.
So how do you know if people are talking about any machine or a car? From the context you can tell. Like in Spanish, mañana means tomorrow and it means morning. And I'm like, how do you know if they're asking you for the morning or for tomorrow? And then if they're asking you for tomorrow morning, they say, mañana de la mañana. So bhayavaha means a vehicle of fear. A fear machine. Just think about this for a minute. A fear machine. A machine that's generating fear. All right, now Krishna repeats this same concept at the end of the Bhagavad Gita. You notice the first two lines are exactly the same, yeah? You see that? Shreyan Swadharma Viguna Paradharma Swanustitat is the same?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? And here he's saying that better to do your own duty imperfectly than apparently someone else's duty perfectly. Doesn't that seem strange? Well, if I can do your duty perfectly and my duty is imperfect, I should be doing your duty.
Sorry, it seems strange to me because if it's, I'm doing perfectly, that means it's my duty. How do I know it?
Interesting, yes. But it's externally perfectly. Mm-hmm. Our duty is our dharma, what's natural to us. So this is the harm of going on the wrong path. Taking someone else's path. Now, there's a harm for ourselves. Because when I'm doing someone else's path, even if I may be apparently doing it perfectly, I'm taking on a persona. I'm pretending to be something I'm not. Oh, I'm so glad you came. I thought this class would be so helpful for somebody who wants to go into psychiatry or psychology. Which one?
Psychiatry.
Yeah. Thank you. So if I take on a persona, how many of you have ever been in a drama? Okay, so in a drama, if you play it expertly, you take on someone else's persona. I read an article once about the famous actress Meryl Streep, and they were quoting her husband. He said, "I feel like I've been married to 1,000 different women." But if you take on someone's persona constantly, it's exhausting. You know, the actors, they cannot stay in character all the time. You have to relax and be yourself. Right? Sometimes, like, we may go to a social event that we don't really want to go to, and we're with people we don't really want to be with, and we're pretending that we want to be with them and that we want to be there, and it's exhausting. Yes? So taking on someone else's duty, you have to pretend to be somebody else. So it's exhausting. And not only is it exhausting, but eventually our real nature will surface. Correct? And Krishna says this very strongly in the Bhagavad Gita. Someone asks, can we change our nature? The answer is, according to Krishna, no. He said, you cannot, I mean, it's possible. Vishwamrita changed his nature, but it took him 60,000 years, literally, and he had two heavy failures along the way. So we just take it, we can't do it. Krishna says it's not going to accomplish anything to try to repress your nature and pretend to be someone else. And this vehicle of fear is also extremely important in terms of our bhakti. Because somebody may make the argument, well, all of this has to do with what Prabhupada called our psychophysical nature. It all has to do with the nature of the body and the mind. Yesterday evening, Bhaktivedanta Maharaj was speaking about how we should transcend the subtle body, manas, buddhi, and ahankar. And this is one of the definitions of bhakti, sarvapadi vinirmuktam, to get rid of all our upadis, all of our designations. So one might say, well, why should I care about acting according to my designation if I'm trying to get free of my designation? But the problem is that the particular body and mind that we have in this life, it has a particular way of being. And when we're situated in our way of being, we find satisfaction in what we're doing. And we don't need very many external rewards. One of the ways you can tell what a person's nature is what do we do without being asked and without being paid? What do we just do? And we do that because we like it. It nourishes us. Because it's what we're meant to be. If I'm in somebody else's field, I'm no longer getting satisfaction from being who I am because I'm not being who I am. So what am I getting satisfaction out of? Externals. The biggest thing people will say when they're working in the wrong field is, well, I'm making money. And the biggest objection people have to being in their proper field is, well, maybe I won't make enough money in that field. And remember in the first class, we talked about rich people who are unhappy and poor people who are happy. That leading a rich life is not just about the number of pieces of cash you have. I mean, that's important. I'm not saying we shouldn't have cash. Please don't misunderstand me. I like having a mobile phone. And shoes, and I mean, I'm not saying that I don't want to have any cash in my life. But that's not just that. You can have millions of dollars and have a poor life. And you can be making $1,500, $2,000 a month and you can have a rich life. Am I correct? Yes? But when we're in the wrong field, we get dependent on that. We get dependent on the externals. How much money we're making, how much status we have in society, how much people are praising us. So the reason that one of the reasons Krishna's emphasizing being in the right place in terms of bhakti is that we're supposed to do detached work. And we're not going to have time to cover it in Gita Fest this time. How to work without ego. How to work just in the mood that I'm a servant of Krishna without any material identification. If I'm doing the work I'm supposed to do, that becomes a very easy thing to do. Because I'm not so attached to the externals. I may need to get paid because I need to pay the mortgage, but I'm not really working to pay the mortgage. I'm working because I love what I'm doing. And I would, if I didn't need to have a mortgage to pay, I would do it anyway somewhere. Maybe not in that place, but I would be doing the same kind of thing someplace anyway. And so it's much easier for me to say, Krishna, I'm doing this for you. And it's much easier to understand, what does Krishna want me to do? We get this question all the time. What does Krishna want me to do? Right, Maharaj was talking about this also, aligning our desires with Krishna's desires. One of the ways I know what Krishna wants me to do is understanding, what is my nature? My nature in this life is what Krishna wants me to do for him. Does this make sense to everybody? If I have a boat, I'm supposed to go on the water. If I have a plane, I'm supposed to go in the sky. If I have a car, I'm supposed to go in the land. Yes? So this is the essence. So now we're going to discuss details, but this is the essence. All right, so what we're going to do now is look at every possible wrong combination. Okay? So we've already had two classes where we talked about defining what is the field of ideas, what is the field of government, what is the field of resources, what is the field of artistry. So I'm assuming that you are all here, and so you're coming in with that basis. If you weren't, you might feel a little lost what to do. All right. So first we're going to look at wrong combinations between the field of government and the field of resources. Now again, when we're talking about wrong combinations, we're talking about a person has the inclination for one field, but they work in another field. Is this clear? Okay. So government and resources. So government redistributes the people's own wealth, and resources creates new wealth. That's one of the key differences between them. Right? People in the field of resources, they create wealth, or they turn natural resources into wealth, and government redistributes that. So resource people, people who have a resources mentality, they think that those in government are foolishly generous. And people who have a government mentality, they think those in resources are greedy. You follow? Oh, those people, they just give everything away foolishly. Oh, those people, they're just greedy. When people who should be in resources work in government, so resources, in the field of resources, you focus on your own special interest. You focus on your own business, your own particular industry, and you're trying to increase the flow of resources to your own industry. You have a laser-like focus on your special interest. However, in government, you have to care about everybody equally. Otherwise, you're going to be terrible in government, right? You're not supposed to care about the rich people more than the poor people, or the white people more than the black people, right? But if you have a resources mentality and you're in government, you're going to have a difficult time having this broad picture. You're going to have a tendency towards favoritism. Also, people in resources act with a view to support their own industry. So if they go into government, They may work in government to support their own industry, their own type of business. Then they may think, well, after I get out of government, I'll go back into my business. I'll go into government, I'll pass laws that favor my particular kind of business, and then I'll go out and I'll have an advantage. Right? They call that the revolving door in government. And so therefore they forget about fairness and justice for society. A good or bad example of this is privatized prisons. So in the United States, there's a number of prisons that are not run by the government. They're run by business people. So if you're a resources person and you're running a prison, do you want more prisoners or fewer prisoners?
More.
Do you want the prisoners to be reformed, or you want them to again commit crimes and come back? You want them to commit crimes again and come back. So you have the opposite view of somebody who's in the field of government. Someone in the field of government is trying to protect everybody and care for everybody. Someone in the field of resources is trying to generate wealth. To care for everybody. They want to generate wealth in order to care for everybody, but that's the second step. And in government, caring for everybody is the first step. Now, suppose somebody with a government nature works in resources. Now, please listen carefully to this because people misunderstand this. In government, the Dharma is you put people before projects. You always prioritize people over projects. In resources, you have to prioritize projects over people. But that is how you take care of people. If I'm running a business and I'm employing 1,000 people, and I prioritize the care of the people over my business will probably fail. And then all those people are out of a job. And then all the customers we serve don't have the business anymore. Does this make sense to everybody? Okay. So if you are a mentality of government and you work in a business, you're going to put your emphasis on the wrong place. And your business will fail. We've seen examples of people who start businesses who have a government mentality, and they'll usually take the majority of the profits and use it for some social welfare work. And either the business will fail, or if it starts becoming very successful, they generally sell it to a person who's in the field of resources. Because they don't have the mentality of making a profit. When government people work in resources, so people in government, their most important thing is honor, fairness, and justice. They're willing to give their lives for their principles. However, in order to be successful in resources, you always have to be thinking about how to expand profits for your own company. You're not thinking about justice for society in general. Right? So when government people work in a business, they're going to be much more concerned for social justice than for having the business be successful. And again, they're likely to make businesses fail. One of the ways in which they're likely to have it fail is how they're going to define a fair price. Again, the mentality of people in government, in the proper dharma, is I collect taxes and I redistribute it. I give everybody what they need. Srila Prabhupada talks about that a businessman has to lie and say, well, I'm not making a profit for you, when they're actually making a profit. But if you have a government type of mentality, you're actually not going to be making a profit. When you say to people, for you I'm making no profit, it will be true. And then you won't be able to have the field function and serve the society. Okay? So we looked at this too. People from resources and government, people from government and resources. Now we're going to look at government and ideas. So both government and ideas, both of these fields, they're focused on long-range vision and they're focused on whole systems. However, the focus of people in the field of ideas will seem very impractical to the people in the field of government. Just yesterday, one of the devotees here, who's definitely in the field of government, was saying something critical of people in the field of ideas to me, and said, yes, they're always talking about impractical things. I said, yes, this is the criticism of someone in the field of government for someone in the field of ideas. And for people in the field of ideas, the behavior of the government often seems too harsh or too hasty. Why didn't you take more time to research it? Why are you taking such a strong position? Okay, when people who are meant to be in the field of ideas work in government. Now, this is something I firmly believe that is a problem in our International Society for Krishna Consciousness. That we have people who are suited for the field of ideas, who are working in the field of government for our society. People in the field of ideas, their dharma is forgiveness, equanimity, tolerance, and detachment. People in the field of government, their ideal is justice and fairness. If you're in the field of ideas by nature, but you're working in the field of government, you're going to forgive criminals. Do you follow? Justice isn't your thing. Forgiveness is your thing. And so you're going to say, oh, we should be forgiving. And then people are like, well, where was the justice? Oh, we should be forgiving. People in the field of ideas are not meant to be working in the field of government. They're not going to deal properly with wrongdoers. And it's a definite problem we have in our ISKCON movement that people who do wrong are not... can you wait? Can you hold it? Is that all right? Okay. I'm just... Otherwise, Patri may be angry if I end too late. But I'll try to have time for questions. Also, we're going to have a general question and answer time at 5 o'clock today, where the three of us will be able to answer questions. Okay, again, ideas, people, and government. Now, this is a really interesting one. Ideas, people tend to be very detached, and especially they're detached from things like fame and honor. Ideas, people tend to not want to eat yasha as their food. But in government, one of the main opulences that government is producing for the people in general is yasha. And this idea of patriotism. Our country, rah, 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 our country, yeah. And you have to do that a little bit in government. Because people have to serve their country, they have to pay their taxes, they have to be obedient to their laws, and to have some sense of national pride is essential. But to people in the field of ideas, that seems really stupid. Why do you want national pride? It's going to be agonizingly difficult for someone in the field of ideas to try to engender this sense of a national cohesiveness that the people in the field of government have to engender in their citizens. I mean, if we think about like a family, you know, you've got to have some sense of family loyalty, right? How is the family going to function? You have to have some sense of national loyalty. Now, of course, that can be taken to an extreme. And so many wars are fought because of extreme national loyalty. But some sense of it needs to be there. Do you follow? Yeah? And people in the field of ideas, they're just like, why do I want to do that? People from the field of ideas going into the field of government. In government, you have to make fast decisions without a whole lot of information. People in the field of ideas like to make slow decisions after doing a lot of research. So if they work in the field of government, either they're going to feel very uncomfortable with having to make fast decisions without all the information. It's called the fog of war. Or they're going to make poor decisions because it's not their ability. All right, what happens when people who have the mentality of government work in the field of ideas? They can politicize knowledge. They can bend knowledge for political purposes. Think of, you know, the historians who change history for political purposes. And people's immediate needs and motives of righteous fame may dominate over truth. Have we seen this? Right? You have to have a field of ideas where there isn't a nationalistic mentality. That's also got to exist. And if people with a nationalistic mentality work in the field of ideas, truth will go out the window. They'll distort truth for the sake of their own fame and their own glory. When those who have the nature of government work in the field of ideas, they may try to impose a more hierarchical structure on how the field of ideas work. People in the field of ideas have a very flowing kind of structure. They have to have kind of a free flow of knowledge. So if people from the field of government go into the field of ideas, they may act as a dam and stop this flow so that knowledge doesn't flow properly. People in the government working in the field of ideas, they may not feel energized or nourished by that field. In the field of ideas, what you're nourished by is vairagya. But they want yasha, which is exactly the opposite. And they may be feeling like they're starving. I think I told you that my family has Russian ancestry. So, my granddaughter asked me if she should pack any prasadam for me, and I said, no, they'll feed me. And I said, and hopefully they'll feed me Russian food. Hopefully it won't be Indian food, it will be Russian food. You know, I find, oh, it's my food. Sometimes you go someplace where you're thinking, I don't like any of this stuff. So if you're working in a field of work where you don't have your natural food, it's very hard to function. Okay, so now we've looked at these two crossovers. Now we're going to look at a crossover of ideas and resources. Are you able to follow how we're... All right. So to people in the field of ideas, people in the field of resources appear self-centered and materialistic. In fact, resources persons personify or epitomize a materialist to somebody in the field of ideas. Now, resources operate, they have their ideals, but their ideals are very practical. They have a practical system of ethics. Now, to people in the field of resources, people in the field of ideas may appear completely impractical. That was true for people in the field of government, remember? Some in the field of government, like, why are you writing papers on pure mathematics? Well, this is even more so for people in the field of resources. They're going to say, how can you make money with that? Right? Why are we spending all this money on this university, the philosophy department in the university? Does it make any money? You going to make any money with a philosophy degree? Right? They can't understand why there should be resources put into something that isn't yielding a profit. Okay, so when people who are suited for the field of ideas work in the field of resources, so their nature is to focus on truth foremost, having a detached, neutral perspective. But in resources, you can't be neutral. You have to prioritize your particular industry for the profit of your enterprise and the profit of your family and the society. And when someone suited for ideas works in the field of resources, they're always going to feel that their ethics are being violated. They're constantly going to feel like that. I mean, that's true with any crossover of fields, but this one perhaps the most. They're going to feel like I'm forced to become profit-minded and I'm forced to think about the interests just of my particular business instead of having a detached view, and they tend to feel kind of disgusted with themselves. So in the field of ideas, there's a concept of fairness and transparency, and this may be such that they're inclined to give things away. So this is true for both government and ideas, that they tend to give things away. But it's especially true for people in the field of ideas. They're very detached, right? So they may even abandon the idea of making a profit. They might like to have their own little garden in their backyard, but as soon as it becomes an agribusiness, and they're there making money. They're just like, they can't even understand it. Remember we said the Bhagavatam says that those in resources are always thirsty, right? Not that they need to drink a lot of water. But people in the field of ideas are naturally always satisfied. But in order to be successful in the field of resources, they have to be always thirsty, and they're just not. They're just like, why do I have to keep doing bigger? Right? All right, when people who should be in the field of resources work in the field of ideas, so they're likely to corrupt the field. Just like pharmaceutical companies that fund research. You follow? Y'all know what pharmaceutical companies are? They make medicines. And if they're funding research, are they going to want impartial research about their medicines? No, because they want to make a profit. So when people who are inclined to resources work in the field of ideas, they tend to corrupt the field. And if they can adhere to the principles of their job, they're going to feel dispirited and unmotivated by the lack of money. Also, in the field of ideas, people often share credit, or they don't even care about getting any credit for anything. And people in the field of resources, they want the credit. They want to be noticed. They want their name there. They want to be paid for it. And they're working in the field of ideas. If they do take on that mentality, they're like, well, you know, what's in it for me? Now, again, they're likely to feel that the concerns of the field of ideas are what we call a pie in the sky. This is an English idiom. In other words, it's stupid. It's useless. And so if they work in the field of ideas, they may not do the research and care. I should have turned off my phone, sorry. I apologize. They may just neglect the research that needs to be done because they're just thinking, why? It's stupid. It's not going to make me any money. All right, ideas and artistry. Now, this is the crossover that the Shastras, the scriptures, most say, don't do this. They say, if you have to do a crossover temporarily in an absolute emergency, never do this one. Never cross ideas and artistry. In both directions. That somebody with a nature of ideas should never work in the field of artistry, and someone who has a nature of the field of artistry should never work in the field of ideas. Do I need to explain something? I'm happy to explain things more if necessary. Is there someone that needs a further explanation? Yes. That's exactly what I'm about to do. All right. Now, there is some similarity between these fields. One similarity is that both people with the nature of artistry and people with the nature of ideas tend to be very satisfied and not ambitious. It's something that they have in common. But people in the field of artistry are satisfied with externals. If someone in the field of artistry has a nice house, a nice romantic partner, decent food to eat, and they can do their craft, they're happy. They're not ambitious by nature. Sometimes people in the field of artistry are pushed to ambition by people in the field of resources. If you can think about people who are naturally in the field of artistry that are pushed to become very rich and famous by their business managers, do they do well? Do those people in the field of artistry, do they do well with a lot of money and fame? No. Because it's not their natural place to be. And people in the field of ideas also are very sad. They don't really care. Many times they don't even care if their name gets credit for their ideas. But the source of the people in the field of ideas' happiness is because they take happiness in the mind and the intellect. They're getting happiness on the people in the field of artistry are happy on the platform of the senses, and the people in the field of ideas are happy on the platform of the mind. Is that absolutely necessary? So it's a very different source of happiness. Now, there's also a similarity we mentioned the other day that some people... I'll wait. Thank you. That some people that you might think are in the field of artistry, some work that you might think is in the field of artistry is actually in the field of ideas. So people whose work is in the fine arts, dance, music, painting, theater, some of those people are in artistry and some of them are in ideas. If their purpose is beauty and functionality of society, they're in artistry. If their purpose is truth and wisdom, they're in ideas. Let's think about musicians. So there are some musicians that all they talk about is love stories, right? That's artistry. We have musicians that use their music to talk about philosophy and to talk about truth. And their music may or may not be aesthetically pleasing, but their purpose is not to entertain you. Their purpose is to enlighten you. Correct? You can all think of examples of each type of musician. And it's the same with any of the fine arts. You can do theater simply to entertain, and you can do theater to enlighten. So people who are using the fine arts to enlighten, you know, you can enlighten people with words, you can enlighten people with mathematics, and you can enlighten people with theater. Yes? Okay. So there is that distinction. You can't just say, oh, you know, he's a musician, he's in the field of artistry. Maybe. Maybe not. Now, commercial art is all in the field of artistry. Okay? Okay. So suppose people who have the mentality of artistry work in the field of ideas. So people with the mentality of the field of artistry, they're concerned for beauty and function in society. They're interested in tangible stuff. People in the field of ideas work with abstractions. They work with, ideas. So when those suited for artistry work in ideas, they can miss subtle things. They can miss the context of things. So they may present facts, quotes, and truths out of context and in isolation in order to preserve or create functionality. Remember, people who are naturally in government, if they go into ideas, they politicize government. I mean, they politicize ideas, sorry. They use ideas for political purposes. People in the field of resources, if they go into the field of ideas, they use the field of ideas to make money for their industry. When people in the field of artistry go into the field of ideas, they use ideas simply to preserve the function of society, to keep the status quo. Remember, people in the field of artistry like to be comfortable. But truth isn't meant to make you comfortable, my dear friend. Truth is meant to make you uncomfortable. Can you see one of the reasons why this would be the most damaging crossover? Not yet. All right. Hopefully in the next 5 minutes you'll see. And then if you still don't see, then I will ask. I'm happy to answer questions. It's just I may answer the question, or did I say something you don't understand? I don't have time in this class to do that. In our book, we give many examples. I'm sorry. They've given me an hour and a half for this. What can I do? I mean, I'm serious. You know, I can't. I just can't. I can give you the concepts. So we have a book. It's coming out. It's this thick, literally. And it's not only Shastra, but we've done... Rukmini, Dr. Ruchiradatta and I, we've done extensive empirical research. And for each of these, we give examples. And we were very careful not to give current examples. Yes. Okay. So you remember that people in the field of artistry, their main function is to bring rasa to society, to bring taste, to bring pleasure. Therefore, When people who are naturally in the field of artistry work in the field of ideas, they bring sensuality to religion, sensuality to spirituality, and sensuality to education. It's supposed to be a place where there's detached wisdom, but it then becomes a place of sensuality. So it's like if you took food and instead of putting it in your stomach, you put it in your eyes. The field of ideas is meant to be the eyes of the society. It's not meant to eat the food. It's not meant to eat the rasa. And then nobody can see. And ideas becomes a field that degenerates society. And again, we have this problem that the people in the field of artistry think the field of ideas is useless. They think it's like crossword puzzles or something. Like, why are you researching these things? Why don't you make a beautiful table? Why don't you sweep the streets? You know, what are you doing this theoretical research about something that you're going to publish in a journal only for other scholars in language that nobody understands? What is the use of this thing? Now, people who are naturally in the field of artistry, they're going to have an inner conflict between detached guidance they need to give and their main desire to please and serve others. In the field of artistry, you like to make a painting that will hang in someone else's house. That's your happiness. As we said, the field of artistry is this close to bhakti because it's this mood that I get pleasure from using my talents to bring pleasure to others that I'm not even going to enjoy. I cook meals for you to eat. I make pictures for you to have. But this comes with it a desire to please my customer and have everything exactly according. If any of you, I've hired a lot of artists, and you know, you go back and forth with them. All right, now it has to be like this. Make it this color. But in the field of ideas, you can't be trying to please anybody but the truth. And so there's going to be this conflict. People who are naturally in the field of artistry, they're going to feel very uncomfortable displeasing others with the truth. Or they may distort information in order to please people. And again, we have this conflict with the way they feel satisfied. So people who want an externally comfortable life, they're very subject to corruption in this field. They're very subject to being bribed. Okay, we'll give you a comfortable life if you fudge, understand, fudge the data, understand? If you distort the data.
Manipulate
the data, yeah, thank you. And because people in the field of artistry, they mostly just want a simple, comfortable life. So they're very open to being corrupted. Remember, people in the field of ideas, they're satisfied internally in mind. So they're not very subject to being corrupted. They can't easily be corrupted by, I'll give you a nice bed to sleep on and good food to eat. But people in the field of artistry can easily be corrupted by that. Now, freedom is the key to the field of ideas. But in the field of artistry, people are more interested in security. They don't want to challenge the status quo. They want to uphold the status quo for security. All right, now let's look at ideas, people, and artistry. And Rukmini and I took a lot of time really thinking about this because the Shastra especially says if you have the mentality of the field of ideas, absolutely don't work in the field of artistry, even if there's an emergency and you're going to die. And you can work in the other fields if there's an emergency and you're going to die, but don't work in the field of artistry. And we were like, why? Why is it this strong, strong prohibition? So in the field of artistry, there's likely to be constraints of deadlines, who you're going to please, right? And then the constraints of that may show themselves in insubordination, procrastination, and a failure to meet deadlines. And we're going to see this problem happening in other crossovers as well. Now, integrity is very important in both fields. In fact, much more so than in government or resources. We know in government that people are going to be diplomatic, which is a kind of duplicitousness. And we know in resources, they're also not going to be totally forthcoming about their profits. But in artistry and in ideas, integrity is very important. You want your plumber to be honest, yes? And you want your priest to be honest. But it's a different kind of integrity. And so when people from the field of ideas go into the field of artistry, they don't have the kind of creative, intellectual, or personal freedom. And it's hard for them to be reliable in the way that a person in the field of artistry has to be reliable. You know, you need your plumber to show up at 10 o'clock because you've got a flood going on. But the people in the field of ideas, that's not the way they work. There's like, well, wait a minute, you know, I have to check with this source and I have to take care of this, and it's very hard for them to do it well. Similarly, people in the field of ideas tend to have a lot of detachment towards sensual things. But people in the field of artistry, their whole purpose is to provide beauty in society. Somebody who's naturally in the field of ideas working in artistry may not particularly care. Well, your plumbing works, so what if it looks hideous? It works. Well, just put some duct tape on it. You know, it's just like the people in artistry, they think, you know, theoretical research is a stupid waste of time. So people in the field of ideas, they may think having full beauty and function, what does it matter? You know, just be on another platform of reality. And I mean, I think I mentioned that I spent some time in one temple where there were none of the devotees were naturally in the field of artistry. And the people who are naturally in the field of ideas had to take care of all the practical things. You really did not want to live in that temple. I mean, things just didn't work. No, they just didn't work. Or if they worked, they were ugly. Now, what can happen to the people themselves is they can get sucked into the sensory nature of the work that they're doing. Now, here's some specific example, like food scientists. Are you familiar with food scientists? Food scientists analyze what biologically makes us attracted to certain foods. Just like we have a biological attraction to things that are crunchy, because that indicates that they're fresh. We have a certain biological attraction to a particular combination of sugar, salt, and fat, because that indicates very high nutrition. So the food scientists manipulate this natural biological attraction to create artificial chemical foods that we have difficulty stopping eating. So that's somebody with the nature of the field of ideas using their abilities in the field of ideas in the field of artistry. They thus corrupt the field of artistry. Right? Psychologists who make advertisements. Right? They're using their knowledge of human psychology to make you buy toothpaste you don't need. They're corrupting the field of artistry. Remember, the field of artistry has to be very honest. We have to trust our people in the field of artistry. But they end up corrupting the field. And when you work in the field of artistry, you're dependent on specific patrons, customers, or employees. And pleasing that subset of society is going to hamper the feeling of autonomy and freedom of those in the field of ideas. It's going to make them feel very uncomfortable. Their main food is vairagya. Their main food is autonomy and freedom. And they're always going to have to be pleasing someone else. It's going to be practically unbearable for them. Okay, government and artistry. So people in government tend to want to expand, and those in artistry tend to want to be, they tend to be satisfied. Those in government and artistry both tend to be externally focused. So that they have in common. Okay, what happens when artistry people go into government? Now, there's a thing in government called the fog of war. We talked about this before with ideas in government, where you have to make quick decisions with limited information. People who are in artistry, we're going to find this almost impossible. People who are naturally in artistry, they work with very specific, clear, concrete parameters. To try to do abstract thinking without proper knowledge is almost impossible to them. And what they'll do is they'll impose bureaucracy on the field of government. Now, there are some people in the field of artistry that work for government as bureaucrats. You want some people doing bureaucratic work in government. But you don't want the field of government to become in and of itself bureaucratic. And the main thing that happens when people who are naturally in the field of artistry work in the field of government is they make it into a bureaucracy. Because the field of artistry, remember, it has very clear parameters for what is and is not a good pot and what is and is not a good piece of construction work. You follow? But government's not like that. So they're going to impose that concept on government. In government, there's the constant focus on the interplay of people. But for people naturally in the field of artistry, that's going to feel just like a distraction that's draining them. They just want to hone their own skills. And they'll look at the natural activities as government as, oh, that's just politics. They won't have any taste for doing the real work. And the strategy and shrewd discretion in decision-making that's required in government, again, artistry people are going to make it bureaucratic. They're going to say, okay, let's make a rule for this, and a rule for this, and a rule for this, and another rule for this, and keep making our rule book bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, instead of using strategy and discretion. And I've seen this also happen in our Hare Krishna movement, that people, I've seen people who should be in the field of artistry, and they're working in management positions in our movement, managing villages and so forth of devotees, and they want to have a rule for this and a rule for that and another rule for this other thing if it's done on a Monday and another rule for this thing if it's done on a Wednesday. Okay, artistry people in government. So we have the personification of government mentality as the firefighter, the run into danger. And the opposite is the person in artistry who wants their own comfortable, secure life. That's their priority, is they want just a simple, comfortable, secure life. They're not going to run into danger. And so again, they're prime targets for corruption. In government, people who work in government tend to get extra perks. You know what is perks? So this can be especially attractive to people who have a field of artistry mentality. Oh, we can give, you know, you have these nice comforts of the field. And so they don't want to take on the danger. You know, think about people working in government, they're sending everybody else off to fight, and they're in their nice, comfortable mansions. That's what happens when someone with the nature of artistry works in the field of government. A person with the mentality of the field of government, they're leading the battle. If you've got to lead the battle, are you going to declare war over anything and everything? I don't think so. If you know, if I declare war, I've got to be at the head of the army. I've got to be right there. Not just there, I've got to be the head. I've got to be in the front. Right? But if you can send everybody else off to fight, while you're just on your couch, you know, eating potato chips. All right, so what happens when government people work in artistry, and we have the same problem that when people in the field of ideas work in artistry, they may have a real problem with deadlines and trying to please other people. They may end up being insubordinate. Imagine your plumber being insubordinate. Well, I'm not going to do it that way. I'm going to show whenever I want. I'm going to do it however I want. And we have the same problem of people in the ideas working in the field of artistry that having to please some subset of society is very difficult for them. People naturally, in the field of government, they want to serve everybody equally. They don't want to just have a particular patron. And it's a very uncomfortable situation for them. All right, let's look at resources in artistry. So both resources and artistry deal with the practical needs of society. But those in artistry tend to focus on the craft and the quality and the satisfaction of a job well done. And those in resources tend to focus on profit, expansion, and quantity. Can you immediately see what the conflict is here? So suppose people who are naturally in the field of resources go into artistry. They automate it. Why should we have each chair handmade, have a factory? We can make more chairs and we can make more money. Right? Fast foods, clothing that becomes fashionably obsolete in one season, plastic replacing metal and glass, entertainment that has, you know, just about sex and violence. This is what happens when resources people go into the field of artistry. They're not concerned with the craft. They're not concerned with the quality. They just want to make money. What happens when artistry people go into resources? They don't want to expand the business. You know, they're happy to have a little bakery selling their home-baked bread and make enough money to pay their bills and feed their dog. And they're happy. And if they're working in the field of resources, they're always going to be pressured. Make it bigger, make it bigger, make more, make more. And they don't want to do that. It's not their motivation. But we have a bigger problem with people in artistry and resources. They don't have the whole view of the flow of resources in society. And they're not thinking about the sustainable and regenerative aspects of the field. So when people who are naturally in artistry go into resources, they're not going to be thinking about ecology. And therefore, they're going to have industries that are polluting. They're interested in, you know, how can I get some immediate comfort from this? They're not thinking long range. This has to take care of society. Now, as you can see, every field has its glory. And the dharma of every field is wonderful and glorious when it's in that field. And when it's out of that field, it becomes a problem. And it becomes a problem not only for the people, but it becomes a problem for society. So I do want us to do a little personal exercise for yourself, but I could take about, well, we started 10 minutes late. I could take maybe 10 minutes if you have some questions about what we've talked about so far. Do you still have your question? Mm-hmm. Yes. It's not a question of working together. No, they should work together. People in the field of ideas need to advise the people in the field of government, and the people who are in the field of government need to take advice from the people in ideas. But someone who naturally has the mentality of the field of ideas should not be doing literally work that's in the field of government. Thank you for asking. Does that clarify? And I'm so glad you asked that question. Did you still have a question? Okay. Yes.
You mentioned earlier and previous day that in each field you have to have a dharma trained.
You have to be trained in the dharma, yes.
So where can we get that training?
Well, I understand that Srila Prabhupada wants the International Society for Krishna Consciousness to give training in the dharma of each of these fields. Have we done that? Not much. Not much. One reason is that I haven't seen a lot of people who really looked at what are these principles. I've seen many people look at the details rather than the principles. So better late than never. I mean, Rukmini in my dream, if Krishna wants, Lord Chaitanya wants, is that our book and then our course will actually start producing career dharma centers where people can get training in the dharma of their field. That's our hope. That's our desire.
Does your book contain some testing? Which field are you in?
We have some exercises in the back of the book. It's it's difficult to do that without some one-on-one. You know, but we do have some exercises in the back of the book. We also have, which, you know, I'm not able to teach everything here. It's too much. But we also have a number of chapters about how to learn about the Dharma of that field. And I'll take you next, sis. Good.
So
then I'm happy. Oh, what a wonderful question.
And then I thought, okay, so you said that there are a lot of crossovers within the Iskcon society that is problematic, the government for working and vice versa. Okay, so there are people of different fields in within the Iskcon, and we are meant to work right, but people of ideas belong to ideas, resources, so then we will be the perfect example to the rest of the population how the perfect society would work. But we're not, and you're working on it right now.
I'm trying. Trying to do my little piece.
And then I thought, okay, so then there are different kind of Vaishnavas within the society. So for some people, it's okay to be materialistic and wealthy.
Well, it's not materialistic.
But
apparently, it will look like that.
Like Prabhupada was teaching us to be, to renounce,
I'm so glad you're saying all this. It's not just problematic for you.
Yeah.
And it was problematic for somebody 5,000 years ago. Someone who was naturally in the field of government, but also a Vaishnava. And it was problematic for him. And he said, Lord, you're talking about Buddha yoga. And you're talking about detachment. And then you're telling me to fight for a kingdom. Why are you giving me these opposite instructions? I don't understand your opposite instructions. Well, we started out this whole slideshow with the instruction of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Gopinath Patanayaka. And he says, I want people also working in the world in all these different fields. You can be materialistic in any of the fields, and you can be renounced in any of the fields. Materialistic is I'm working under the spell of sattva, rajas, and tamas. Detached is I'm working to please Krishna. So one of the principles of career dharma is that you work without false ego. And again, I can only teach so much here. That's what I'm saying. If you want more, you know, we have the book. We're going to have in-depth courses. But to work... I'm a servant of Krishna. I have a boat. I'm going to serve Krishna by going on the water. I'm a car. I'm going to serve Krishna by going on the land. I have a plane. I'm going to serve Krishna in the air. I'm not this boat. I'm not this car. I'm not this plane. But that's what I have. And thinking, you know, my particular mentality is bad, that doesn't help. Because as Krishna says, we can't repress our nature. We're going to do our nature anyway. So if you don't do your nature in the right place, you're going to be trying to do your nature in the wrong place, and you're going to be causing havoc. And Krishna wants all of these natures. We all want somebody to be producing wealth. Somebody's got to produce wealth. Somebody's got to govern. Somebody's got to research. Somebody's got to do music and construction. And somebody's got to do all of these things. The only way you can have a society where you don't need all that, in the very beginning of Satya Yuga, there wasn't like that. Everybody just meditated all the time. It was a totally tropical environment. The trees just gave fruit. The ground just produced grains. Nobody had to till the ground. It didn't last very long. Very soon these divisions manifested. But in general, you can't have a society without this. So, you know, Arjuna was thinking that his government nature was bad and materialistic. Oh, it means I want the kingdom and I'm going to be willing to fight, and fighting is terrible. And Krishna's like, no, do it for me. I mean, if you're in the field of resources, where are you getting the wealth from? You're getting it from Krishna. All wealth is the Lord's wife. The earth is the Lord's wife. You know, if you get things from your mother to make something nice for your father, that's not materialistic. Detachment is detachment from a sense of that I'm the doer, that I'm the owner, that I'm the proprietor, that I'm the enjoyer. That's detachment. The detachment of the field of ideas, when brought into the other fields, corrupts them. We don't want a fully detached government, or fully detached business people, or fully detached artisans like those in the field of ideas. It destroys it. Do you want to eat tasteless food? It's not what you want. You know, that it wouldn't be pleasing to anyone. So anyway, Arjuna had, you're in very good company, because Arjuna had exactly the same doubt. So exactly, except he wasn't in the field of resources, in the field of government, but he had exactly the same doubt. Aren't I being materialistic? Aren't I supposed to be detached? How can I do this work detached? Krishna says, fight for the sake of fighting without considering gain or loss, victory or defeat, honor or dishonor. It's interesting, because Krishna starts out by saying, for those who've been honored, dishonor is worse than death. And then he says, but fight without considering honor or dishonor. Fight for me. Does that help? Yes, but we would like to have an example. I mean, it'd be nice to have some example somewhere. At least we can do it at an individual level. We don't have to wait for all of society to be. The last part of our book is a vision for society in general. How the fields interact, like we were asking, how they interact with each other. That we discuss in the last part of the book, which is primarily probably of interest to some people in the field of ideas and government. But how there's competition within a field, cooperation between the fields, and how the fields give checks and balances to each other. So we'd like to have that as an example. Maybe somebody will read the book and say, hey, you know, let's do it in our town. That would be nice. But at least we can have some idea where we're going. Yes, brother.
Thanks for the class. You just said that you can train everybody.
You can what?
You cannot train everybody, you said, right?
Well, not here during Gita Fest.
I'm just saying that there are some ISKCON-based programs, like, for example, for family mentoring by Uttama Partha.
Yes, yes, very good friends of mine.
I mean, and what they do, they train trainers, right? Is it something that you...
This is exactly what we want to do, yes. Okay. It's exactly what we want to do. We're working on several levels of courses, and one level of course, I mean, this probably will take a year before it's fully out. Because you have to develop the course, then you have to pilot it, then you have to get feedback, and, you know, it's a while before things, it just is what it is. But yes, the idea is that we want to train trainers. I mean, we would ideally like to have that all over the world there are centers where people can go and get training like this. Yes, that's exactly what we want to do. All right, any other questions on this? Yes. Oh, very good question.
Or at least 70-30% if you have to work in both.
Okay, very, very good question. So, and we get this question all the time. So, yes, if it's artistry in another field. So if a person is primarily in the field of artistry, but they also have some attraction, like, let's... pull up our... Am I going to be able to do this? No, I am not going to be able to do this. And we are not going to try. Can you put it up here? 1, 2, 3. And I'm sorry that it's in red. Red was the only marker they gave me that worked. Next time I will say, I need a whiteboard and I need good markers. So, can you see it? Or you're not even at an angle where you can see it? Okay, so the main questions that people in the field of artistry ask about their work is it supportive and is it beautiful? That's the main thing they care about, is I want my work to be supportive and beautiful. But let's say you also really care about justice and honor. Let's say you care about both artistry and government. So you might be a person in the field of artistry that helps people in the field of government. Or let's say you really care about support and beauty, but you're also really interested in truth and wisdom. You may help people in the field. You're in artistry. You're not in ideas, but you're helping people in the field of ideas. So usually when it looks like there's two fields, it's people in the field of artistry that are not just selling bread or selling pots or fixing the plumbing, but they're assisting in one of the other fields. Right? Just like there's one friend of mine who is a video editor. So I give her videos that I use for teaching and she edits them. And she particularly likes working on those videos. So she's in the field of artistry, but she's helping me in the field of ideas. Now the other places where it might look like it is where a person's sort of on the edge. Like a person who's in the field of ideas, but they're an advisor to people in the field of government. Or someone in the field of government who's particularly supervising the field of resources. Or particularly supervising the field of artistry. So they're still firmly in one field, but they may have a lot of interaction with another field. But no, you can't really be in two fields because the mentality is different. Like either you have a mentality of running toward danger or being secure. You know, you really can't have both. They're opposite. They're not really compatible. You'd be a very conflicted, unhappy person. Does that make some sense?
Works with you making video, it seems to me that he's still working in the field of artistry.
Yes.
Not so much in a field of ideas.
Well, but she's helping in the field of ideas. She likes to edit videos that facilitate the field of ideas. She herself is not in the field of ideas. She's in the field of artistry. But she likes to help people in the field of ideas, particularly. So I might be in the field of artistry, but I work in a law office. Or I work in a doctor's office. You know, or I work for a university. Does that make some sense?
Yes, thank you.
Anything else on that? Because this is an important point that we get asked all the time.
No, thank you.
Okay. And you had another question?
Assume that in our society, current society, people of resources hire governments and they pay money for people of ideas. So I assume that it's like that.
Yes, it is.
And so how should people who already understand that it's wrong from those two areas, should battle that or change that?
I mean, that to definitely be changed. I mean,
yeah,
it's...
but how the people from those two...
How are we going to convince them?
I mean, how to bring a change?
I'm hoping we're starting here.
Right now.
Right now? Right here, right now? Mm-hmm. I'm hoping.
The practical steps. I mean.
You're talking to a person in the wrong field. That's not my dharma. The only persons who can do this practically are persons in the field of government. The Prabhupada says only the field of government can institute for an ashram. I'm not able to do that. It's not my shakti. I can't do that.
You have to get the knowledge of that.
I can give the knowledge and the guidance for it, but I can't do it. So at some point, people in the field of government are going to have to do that. You know, the kind of thing I can do, Krishna willing, Prabhupada willing, is I can make knowledge and training available. I can get it so that people have light bulb moments and go, oh, yeah, that makes sense. We should do that. And hopefully some of the people that get these light bulb moments are the people who can actually put it into action. But I'm not capable of doing that. It's not my... I can't. One has to know one's boundaries. If I'm teaching this and I don't know my own boundaries, then that's a lot of trouble. You know, that's not a place for me to go. But I can certainly set up a system and help set up a system for people to be trained in this and people to be educated in this. I mean, I've already had a couple people, two devotees talk to me about, hey, I would like to take this and set this up in a small way in this particular location. So that's what's needed. You can always pray. Prayer creates opportunities. Yes.
So what happens if yesterday we talked about the marriage and how it's supposed to be overlapping the fields. So what happens if it already overlaps the field and the marriage already happened? And
yeah.
You have this knowledge and
At least be aware of it. You know, at least be aware. I mean, in Vedic society, there were marriages between people of different fields, although it was like certain combinations were considered okay and certain combinations were considered really not okay. And interestingly enough, in the Bhagavatam, if it's a marriage between people of two different fields, the children often tend to gravitate toward the field of the mother. Of the mother. Ramaharshan Sutta is a good example of that. His mother was in the field of ideas, his father was in the field of government, and he gravitated toward the field of ideas. Or they tend to be identified like that with the mother. But certain combinations are really considered like not a good idea. Like especially women who are in the field of ideas, it's not a good idea for them to marry outside their field. But at least be aware. You know, if you're aware that, okay, well, we have this differences in, we're going to have a difference in a value system. We're going to have a difference in how we see the world. And let's at least try to find that way to understand each other. I mean, you have a similar but different situation when there's cross-cultural marriages. So I've also done a lot of study of cultural differences because I'm in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And different cultures are actually really different. Like for Indians, they show respect for a guest by putting food on your plate that you say you didn't want. Which, to me as an American, is inscrutable. Like, if I say I don't want it, why are you giving it to me? But they're giving it to me to show respect. And when I try to show respect by when they say, no, I don't want it, I don't give it, they don't understand that. They're like, why aren't you giving me more? Because you said you didn't want to. So, you know, we're both trying to be respectful, but we demonstrate respect in opposite ways. Completely opposite. So it's understanding these things, otherwise you tend to disparage the character of the other person, like you use the word materialistic. You know, if someone from the field of ideas marries someone from the field of resources, they're going to think, the ideas person is going to think the resources person is a materialist. And the resources person is going to think the ideas person is completely impractical, airy-fairy, flying in the sky. But if you can understand, this is the source of this problem, and it's not that there's anything wrong with the other person. I mean, there might be, but that's a different subject. But it's not that just because of this, there's something wrong with the other person's character. And to learn to appreciate the way the other person sees the world. That it's just another equally valid way of seeing the world. And then to allow the other person to make a contribution to the family in their own way. I know of a very successful marriage where the husband is in the field of ideas and the woman is in the field of resources. And he's for many years run a Govinda's restaurant, but he doesn't care one bit about making any money. He's running the restaurant as a preaching platform. It's just theoretically being run as a business. He doesn't care. And he uses the restaurant, he has a place in the restaurant where people can come and take classes in Krishna consciousness. They can go to kirtans, they can have classes, and they pay for that. So they'll get a ticket that gives them, like, you know, kirtan and meal kind of thing, you know, or a class and a meal. And then he also advertises follow-up classes at their home. So then they have classes in Bhagavad Gita and in cooking and things like that. And they've brought a ton of people to Krishna consciousness. And one of the most successful preaching programs I've seen anywhere in the world, and they attract a wide range of demographics, people from all different ethnic, national backgrounds, married, single, 20 years old, 60 years old. I mean, they're highly successful. But the way that runs is that his wife is an incredible person in the field of resources. Now she's retiring, but she used to run 6 boutiques. Her testimony is in our book. And she would design the clothing herself, and go to China and have it manufactured. And she generated so much income from her business that she was basically making up for any shortfall in the restaurant. She was backing the restaurant preaching effort. She donated, I think, $500,000 to the TOVP. A very, very successful. She paid for Indrajumna Swami to bring a tour to Australia, $70,000. And they work very well together. You know, they understand each other. He appreciates that, you know, my wife is a businesswoman and she's an empowered businesswoman. And she appreciates my husband is a preacher and a teacher. And they appreciate each other's mentality and they appreciate each other's way of looking at the world and they support each other in what they're doing. But he doesn't, you know, he'll sometimes help her with the business and she'll sometimes help him in the restaurant, but that's not their... They're a very nice couple. They're like very good, very dear friends of mine. Okay, so let's... you want to spend a little bit of time on a plan?
Yeah.
Is that all right? Okay. So looking at these... I'd like you to think, if you can write this down somewhere, that's good. I know hardly anyone has paper and pencil anymore, but you could write it on your phone. You need something to write with and something to write on. Maybe it's your finger and your phone.
One click.
One click, right? But I'd like you to actually write down for yourself, which of these rank them? Which is most important to you as what you want your work to provide for the world? Okay, can you rank them, please? Take like about 5 minutes. Put these in order for yourself of what's most important to you. I'd like you to write it down, not just do it in your head. It'll work better if you write it, even if you're just writing it on a note app on your phone. These questions, as you see, are in groups of two. See if you can pick what would be your two or three most important ways to feel rich and your most important group of two questions. And by just, we mean fair. Well, if we want to look at that, you can look here. That generally, is it true, is it wise, also produces gyan and vairagya. Is it sustainable, is it regenerative, generally produces aishvarya. Is it supportive, is it beautiful, generally produces shri. Is it just and honorable, generally produces yasha and virya. But also you can think, what do you want in your life? Which of these kind of prosperities do you want in your life from your work? What do you want to produce for society, and what would you like? You might want all of them, but think, what do I want the most? With these questions, if my work doesn't do these two, it's useless. Okay, who's picked what are their top sets of questions and what are their top two or three prosperities? Who's picked that? Please raise your hand if you've picked them. Okay, give it another few minutes. Excuse me? Yes?
So when we're picking what's most valuable, I don't understand how, for example, honorable and true would be two different. Like, how can I choose one of those when if it's not true, it can be honorable, or if it's honorable but not wise and true, it doesn't make any sense. Then how can I choose one of those categories when they're so weak?
Suppose by speaking truth and wisdom and bringing truth and wisdom to the world, you become dishonored. Is that possible? Excuse me? You might be dishonored in society. And sometimes I can do things that are just and fair in the society and honorable in the society, but they might not be the ultimate wisdom. I'm realizing how hard it is for me to speak about this in an unbiased way. We're all very naturally biased towards our own field. And so for me to talk about the beauty of the other fields in a completely detached, unbiased way, it's difficult. I'm fighting against something in myself to do that. It's fascinating observing that happening within myself.
Is it just a fair stance of right and wrong?
Things like social justice. That's always the case, isn't it? That's always the case. That's always the case. It's definitely contextual. Definitely. Some things, and this is something we teach in our Shastric Advisory Council course on what's called hermeneutics, or how we understand the difficult statements in Shastra or difficult statements from Srila Prabhupada. I mean, there were certain things that Prabhupada talked about that in the 1800s were, yeah, of course, that's what you should do to be just and honorable, and now they're considered abominable. And there were things that in his childhood were considered abominable that now are considered laudable. And that's true even when Prabhupada was preaching in the 60s and 70s. So some of the things that people would have objected to in the 60s and 70s, like, say, ecology. Ecological awareness was considered a bad thing in the 60s and 70s. Science and technology was going to take over the world. Artificial fertilizers, you know, artificial pesticides was going to have the green revolution that was going to feed the world. Anyone who was against those things was antisocial and evil. So that kind of preaching from Srila Prabhupada was considered radical and bad, and now it's considered good. You know, in getting your children married when they're like 13, 14 years old, well, in the 1800s, everybody did that all over the world. You know, Gandhi married at 13. I mean, you do that now, you're going to go to jail. So, yes, well, now that's another thing. We will never end that discussion. But just making the point that what's considered just and honorable at one time can change 180 degrees, sometimes in 20 years. Yeah, so the details of that, which is why talking about the details of these things is not very productive. So if someone looks at the Shastra and looks at some of the details of these dharmas, they're not necessarily applicable. The principles are always applicable, but the details are not. You know, you try to import the details of one time or one society into another, and it doesn't translate well. Well, of course, it should be according to Shastric principles. Shastric principles are eternal. But the details of how that manifests, yes, it's going to change according to time, place, and circumstances. That's a fact. It will. I mean, frankly, even how bhakti is performed changes according to the different yugas. It's a point Prabhupada makes over and over again. It's not done exactly the same way at different times. Although the basic principles of bhakti are there. All right, so now has everybody done this? Ranked what's most important? All right, so now we're going to do the most important part of this. Okay. I'd like you to not give in to the temptation to think about a very specific career. The temptation is going to be for my mind to kind of search, what specific career do I want? Because also some specifics may change over your lifetime, but you might still be in the same field and get the same kind of richness. What I'd like you to do instead is just kind of relax and imagine that you were doing the sort of work that gave you those kinds of riches, those kinds of prosperity, and let you provide those benefits to society. Imagine that that tomorrow you were in that career. I don't know what the details are, but it's not important, and don't even imagine that. Imagine how you are feeling. How are you feeling when you're in the right place? You're doing what you're meant to do. You're contributing what's most important to you. You're getting the kind of prosperity that really enriches you. And you're feeling, I'm in the right place. I'm doing what I'm meant to do. I'm the greatest expression of who I am. And in this best expression of who I am able to really offer myself to Krishna and Guru. And just take a couple minutes and feel, imagine the feeling of what that feels like to be in the right place. What we just did is a kind of prayer. Bhaktivedanta Maharaj talked yesterday about what the soul can do is desire. And he talked about aligning our desires with the desire of the Lord. The Lord wants all of us to be in the place where we can be the best expression of who we are. Does that make logical sense to everybody? Like, duh, of course that's what he wants. Why would he want us to do anything else? And many of us give up on ever being able to do that. When we take the time to feel what that would feel like, what we're communicating to the Lord is, I want what you want. I want to be the best expression of myself in the right place. All right. Now, what could you do? Today is Tuesday, yeah? What could you do this week to start moving towards this? Or if you're already there, to help move someone else toward this. So I'd like us to make a little plan, something we could do between now and Sunday. So it could be a very little thing. It doesn't have to be a great big thing. You know, if two lines are in parallel and one moves just a millimeter, it will end up in a completely different place. You don't need huge shifts in your life necessarily to end up with big changes. There's not a commensurate one-to-one correspondence between the amount of the shift and the amount of the change. So what could you do between now and Sunday? Something that you're actually going to do, please. Don't pick something outrageously big and huge that you're not going to do. Something you're going to do. And I'd like you to write this down. It should be stated in the positive. Something you're going to do, not something you're not going to do. Like, you don't want to have a plan, for example, like, I'm not going to get angry anymore. You want to have a plan of, I'm going to be peaceful when I'm provoked. Do you follow? We don't know how to do a not. It's like if I say to you, okay, think about whatever you want except for a blue elephant. Right? Doesn't work. So the plan needs to be stated in the positive. What positive thing will I do? And it needs to be something under your control. This can't be a plan as to what your wife is going to do or your boss. Something that you're going to do. And be as specific as you can. When, where, how, and as specific as you can in terms of what will you do in terms of behavior, what will you do in terms of your thoughts, what will you do in terms of your feelings, and make sure it's something that's not going to mess up your whole life. Okay? So let's just take about 3 minutes. If you could write down a plan, how you're going to move forward, either for yourself, if you need to make some change or move in some direction, or if you're already situated, how you could help somebody else. This particular formula for making a plan has a very, very high probability of actually happening, by the way. It's a well-researched formula. Okay, who has come up with something that they can work on between now and Sunday? Something. Who's come up with something? Something. Little thing. It can be something that'll take you 5 minutes. A little something. Okay, who again? Who's come up with something? Please raise your hands if you come up with something. All right, thank you. Can everybody give them a round of applause? Thank you. Yay! Thank you very much.
Thank you, formula.
My phone just started talking to me. So I hope that you gained something from these. I know that there was a lot more we didn't cover. And again, if you'd like to get on our mailing list for the book and the course, please sign up on our mailing list. But I hope that this has at least begun the conversation, begun the thought process, something you can share with others, something that you can take that will enrich your life. And I hope in some way that you're seeing that the teachings of the scripture and the teachings of Srila Prabhupada on this are real and practical and important. So we are going to have a general Q&A time later today, and if there's other questions you have on these things that you can ask then, you're very welcome to do so. Anything that you found good in these seminars is due to Srila Prabhupada. Anything you found bad is all my responsibility. So I hope you can take the good and ignore the bad. Thank you. Hare Krishna.